Welcome to Exploring the Marketplace, a podcast all about how faith impacts our guests' careers and lives. I'm Sean Bowles here with my co-host.
I'm Bob Haston, and we're here to bring you unfiltered, powerful conversations with industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and culture shapers who are living out their faith in extraordinary ways. From billion-dollar boardrooms to creative industries, we reveal how God is moving through everyday, ordinary people just like you, and this podcast will give you courage, which is our goal.
Yeah, these are the stories you don't get to hear on Sundays. Plus, we get to dive deep in the latest trends in business, finance, entertainment, and politics, giving you real insight from a kingdom and biblical perspective.
This is where faith meets influence. This is Exploring the Marketplace.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Exploring the Marketplace. I am Bob Haston, and I'm here with my co-host, Sean Bowles. And we're so excited because season five is here. We're kicking things off with a topic that's near and dear to us, purpose-driven business.
That's right. There's a shift happening, Bob, and more companies, big and small, are no longer just focusing on profit, but on impact, which is just stunning. You know, that people are thinking this way on mission, on faith, on Christian-led businesses are becoming models of integrity and community transformation and culture setting from the inside out. We've seen it over and over. Business leaders giving back, aligning with their values and even kingdom principles and creating places where people actually want to work. And it's a wave we believe is from God.
It's wild, Sean. Forbes and the National Christian Foundation are even picking up on it. There's a real momentum behind this idea that business can be one of the strongest forces for good in culture when it's rooted in biblical values.
Yeah, it's not just startups. It's not just major corporations, but we're seeing leaders who are not afraid to say, I built this business with purpose and we're here to serve people eternally, not just transactionally. I think of like, I don't know if you remember the banker we had on from West from England and how he started a nonprofit bank that would actually, the profits of the bank would go back to serve the community. It was brought in, and UK had never had a nonprofit bank before. And he was part of the team that brought it to the UK from Germany. And I think that those are the kinds of things that people are looking at going, why not? Why isn't there more purpose in the business to actually serve people groups, whether it's marginalized groups or whether it's mainstream groups? I think it's just really profound.
Yeah, I do too. Purpose isn't just a buzzword anymore.
Yeah.
Purpose is profit, retention, innovation. Teams are more loyal. Customers connect more deeply. It's a win-win when it's authentic. I think when we talk about this topic, Sean, I think of Tom's Shoes.
Yeah.
That a percentage, a high percentage, I should look this up, of the profit from each shoe goes to giving shoes away to underserved peoples.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that there's so many companies right now that if you have a choice of buying from four different brands as a consumer, or if you have a choice of doing business with four different companies, and one of the four actually has a purpose where you feel like you're giving back through them, you're actually, you love their mission, you're going to go with what you feel emotionally connected to versus just that company wants to make money. And so when people make their purpose known as a business, it actually is making a difference for how consumers engage and how even people do business from business to business right now.
Sean, why do you think it's changed to this point for purpose like this? Because I don't know, there's been, you know, decades and centuries in this country. And why do you think it's changed?
I'm sure you have a reason you think it's changed, but we haven't talked about this before, but I think it's changed because people see so much undone in the world and they see so many problems in the world, whether it be, you know, anti-human trafficking or racism, or they see environmental issues or whatever, you know, issues with animals and animal cruelty. And if you're, you know, my daughter's buying makeup and she's 10 years old and she's thinking, I don't want to do anything with any Sephora company that has animal cruelty in it or any Sephora company that's not environmentally friendly. And she's 10 and she's wired that way. We haven't taught her that. She's wired to say, I want to do things that really help the world and give back to the world and steward the world. And so I think there's something inside of us that wants the world to be put back right again, even if we're not Christians. And as Christians, we know what's called stewardship. As right. People who aren't believers, maybe it's just a sense of so much is broken. I want to do what I can in every transaction to help.
It's cool. Like when you talk like this, I think about Proverbs 16:3. And it's a simple scripture, but commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established. And it seems like using a biblical perspective, reading what the Word of God says, and then applying it in our business, in our businesses, is just, it just seems like that's how it should be, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be that Christians would try to engage with a purpose, but it was more like it was edutainment, or it was very preachy. And so it's like, I'm going to put a scripture on this. So I'm going to put, you know, a phrase on this that matters to Christians only, pretty much. And now it seems like a lot of the Christians who are engaging purpose-driven companies or purpose-driven themes in entrepreneurship are doing it in a way that actually solves big questions that the world has. And so then the world's more open to hear about Jesus or the gospel, because Christians are right there in the middle of foster care, or Christians are right there in the middle of homelessness, or Christians are right there in the middle of, you know, environmentalism or whatever, actually helping and contributing in a real way. And I think it's a stark contrast to what was happening even 30 years ago or 60 years ago, because God has given a vision to Christians who maybe grown up around maybe some of the Christianity that wasn't as transformative, and said, I need my Christian faith to actually impact the world around me and see the change that Jesus paid a price for on the cross, versus I just want to, you know, I'm going to keep those things very separate. Like my career and my Christianity are very separate. And I think it's just beautiful.
Yeah. I think culture has been building a business culture or an environment where even if you're on a team, if you're an executive, you can build a culture within a secular company and have it and be a high performer. I wrote in Business of Honor about Google did a study to find out why are the highest performing teams the highest performing teams. And it was called Project Aristotle. And they couldn't, what they finally came up with, Sean, after spending millions of dollars on this study, is that the highest performing teams cared about each other.
See?
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me, when you have a purpose in your company,
yes,
you'll either violate your employees because you're just trying to accomplish the purpose of making money and also the purpose of whatever you've founded, or you'll look at your employees and the people you're involved with and you'll say, let's do this together and let's solve this together. And it could actually be such a give back. And you guys do a great job in your company as a commercial painting company. Just I watch your employees and your company culture, and it feels like they know why they're there and they feel covered by you guys, even though they may not understand what covered means. They feel covered by you guys as the owners and bosses and CEO. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Before we get to our guest introduction, Sean, listen to the scripture, Matthew 5:16, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. They might not know why companies are doing good things or good deeds. They might not know that they're actually glorifying their Father in heaven, but our call as believers is to be bent towards the Father, so that the people who we work with and work around and our partners and our vendors can see that there are companies who actually have a purpose and a culture that is, it's really amazing.
I love that so much. Well, our next guest is incredible because he helps to coach people in so many different ways. I'm sure culture is a big part of that. His name is Preston Poore, and he is someone who not only understands the power of purpose, but has lived it out in the highest levels of business. Preston Poore is a veteran Fortune 500 executive, a leadership coach, and a Selah award-winning author and the founder of the Poore Group, where he equips values-driven leaders to multiply their influence. With over 30 years of experience at brands that we all know, like Coca-Cola Company and the Hershey Company, I think I want his employee discount. Preston brings a powerful blend of corporate strategy and timeless biblical values. He's a certified Maxwell Leadership Speaker and a Colson Fellow, and he's passionate about raising up leaders who live and lead with integrity. And his story and insights are going to inspire you guys.
Yeah. And you know, Sean, he just wrote a new book called How is Greater Than What. And so I can't wait at the end of our interview to talk to him about that. Preston Poore is up next.
I want to invite you to partner with us to spread the gospel around the world. And we're doing this through our TV shows and our podcasts or social media. We're helping Christians navigate culture with a biblical worldview of what God's doing right now in society, news, entertainment, the church, through the Sean Bowles Show, which is our weekly commentary show on podcasts. We're building courage with our ministry audience for their calling and their careers for exploring the marketplace, which is a CBN news show and a podcast. And we're helping thousands to grow spiritually and their connection to Christ and training them to hear God's voice. And we're activating them in their gifts and helping them to have coaching tools for their inner development through Spiritual Growth Academy Online. On top of this, I get to minister around the world with Sound Biblical Truth on Prophetic Edge through YouTube all week long. And we have Sunday services even with YouTube. And we have weekly videos. And this doesn't even touch other social media that we do. I, of course, do a lot of ministry with TBN, and I host a lot of different media outside of what we're doing in our ministry. But we want to have you come help us. We want to invite you to help us expand our reach. And we are on testimony overload of the goodness of God changing people's lives through the impact that we're having as a ministry. But we need you to help us create this media, this ministry. You can be a part of our team and our family. And we get to pray for you when you do this. We pray for our partners weekly. We get to resource you. We send you regular resources, both in the mail, but also online, because we want you to be equipped and reinforced. And we also have monthly partner meetings where you get to connect with me and our Bulls team online live, so you can feel the synergy of what God's doing and let it energize your life, as well as we get to pray for you live every month. And if you can't come live, you're still going to watch the video and get the prayer, because we take whatever God's doing in our ministry and we impart it to you so you can have the benefit. But become a partner today so our fruit becomes your fruit.
Well, welcome back. We're here with our new friend, Preston Poore. Preston, we're so happy to have you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Preston, I mean, your background, your career is so extensive and amazing, but how did you get involved with this? And when did God become a part of it, or was he always there?
Wow. Thank you. We have 3 or 4 hours today, right?
Exactly.
Just kidding on it. Hey, I'll get right to the point. There was a tipping point for me in 2005. And before 2005, I was very performance-based, performance-driven. How would Preston look based on the results that he delivered at the Coca-Cola company? I didn't care what collateral damage was left in the wake behind me. I actually had a poster in my office that said, performance over people.
Oh, wow.
Let that soak in for a second.
Yeah.
I thought that if I did things well, did them right, and I was running over people or what, and I got to the top, that's what I was after. Now, mind you, I became a Christian when I was in eighth grade.
Wow.
And I won't date myself. That was a long time ago. And there's a long time between surrendering my life to Christ and then actually surrendering my career to him. But in 2005, I remember sitting in a conference room, and I was about to do a year-end review with one of my associates. The individual lived in Memphis, Tennessee. I was in Knoxville at the time, big territory for the Coca-Cola company. And we'd had a rough relationship. I was working to make her a little Preston, if you will. And she wasn't complying. And she didn't have the same values, strengths, talents, abilities that I had. But I was trying to shape her and mold her that way. And so we had a lot of tension between the two of us. And I remember sitting in that conference room and getting ready for the call. My manager was about to come in. And so I pick up the call. And before I could even get a word in, she goes, Preston, you're a jerk. I quit.
Wow.
Hung up on me. So I was there prepared, ready to do my, and I just kind of sank and go, wow. You know, the funny thing is, guys, is that was the second associate to quit on me in as many months, 2 or 3 months. And so I went into my manager's office and stopped her before, obviously she was coming down to be in the call with me, because we had some performance things we were going to try to talk about. And I relayed the situation to her, and I knew it wasn't going to be good news. And what she did, she said, Preston, she affirmed me. She said, Preston, you're a top performer. Then there was this long, pregnant pause. And I'm thinking, okay, where's the but? And then she said, but the way you treat people lacks everything. It's creating issues for you. You need to go out and get it fixed. If you want to keep going up in the company, you got to get it fixed. And I just said, how? She said, I don't care. I don't know how you do it. You just need to go get it done. Well, I walked back into my office, guys, and all I could hear in the back of my mind was this phrase, you're a jerk. You're a jerk. You're a jerk. And from that point on, there was a tipping point that I had to start to do some reflection. Engaging an executive coach, seeking God and saying, okay, wait a second. There's this incongruence between who I am on Sunday at church with my family and the way I treat people at work and what's happening at work. And so that led to this journey back in 2005, that tipping point for me, where I went through probably 10 years of change and then another 10 years at the Coca-Cola company, where I had the opportunity to have a huge influence and work internationally and do some things like that. So I would pause there and just say, hey, there was a tipping point in 2005 where I had to surrender my career to the Lord and said, hey, I can't do this on my own. I need your help, your wisdom, and I've messed everything up big time. I surrender myself to you and just, I need your help.
Wow. It's interesting, Preston. Were you surprised at you're a jerk, or did... Or were you aware that maybe you had, I mean, you had a poster that said performance over people. So were you aware, or was it a surprise? I mean, was it like a light bulb going on?
Yeah, I think it, so it's a great question. When you ask about that, you start getting into emotional intelligence and self-awareness.
Right.
I would venture to say that I wasn't intentionally trying to be a jerk to people. No. It was just the demeanor, the way I interacted with people, sure, to get things done. If you didn't like it, it was my way or the highway kind of thing. And get behind me or I'm going to run you over. So I would say that there was an awareness, maybe an epiphany. There was something really, when you get to the bottom of your rope, you're like, yeah, oh my gosh, I've lost two, yeah, associates. And my boss just told me that I might not make it in the company unless I get something fixed.
Right.
It made me reflect. It wasn't just a reflection. It was, man, it was this journey that it set me on. And the great thing is that the company paid for an executive coach for me that I had a, wow, great relationship with,
yeah,
because they were invested in me. They said, Press, we get it. We want. And the neat thing on this, guys, is this, is after I went through that executive coaching and I wrote it in my, I wrote a book called Discipled Leader. And this is my second book that I wrote, but I wrote in there about my manager's response when I wrote a letter after I went through the journey of self-reflection and with the coaching. And she actually shed a little tear. Because I was honest in it. I said, this was my fault. I take ownership. I know what my triggers are. And triggers being things that set you off and the way you act toward other people, which I had a bunch of them. A lot of triggers, and still do, I guess, some ways. I still have to work through those myself.
Yeah, we all do.
Perfect, but yeah, it was.
I don't know what a trigger is, guys. Just kidding.
Yeah. You have no idea.
0%. No.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about how this affected your family. Like, how did it affect? Like, when you went through this tipping point change, what stage was your family at, and how did it affect how you did life with just everybody else?
Yeah. So you know, it's interesting. Thank you, Sean, for the question. It was this incongruence again. If you take a Venn diagram, it's kind of like the spiritual and the secular, right? And a lot of people live two different lives. It's not that I was living a separate life, but my wife said, why can't you treat people the way you treat us at home? I was a loving father, a loving husband. I was a good church member, all those kinds of things. But when it came to Monday, it was like dog eat dog. How do you start to, you know, how do you continue to climb the corporate ladder, provide for your family, and perform? And so, but the good news is this, is that when I started going through the transition, I think I acknowledged it. My wife was the greatest. She walked alongside me through the whole thing. A group of friends, family that walked alongside it, and had a lot of support on it. So it wasn't a doom loop, but it was a point where I got and then started building back up. And it wasn't out of that hole necessarily. It was just building differently to go and be able to do something different.
You use a phrase called the exchanged life. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that means to you?
Sure. So I give you some context real quick. There's a men's discipleship program. It used to be called Christian Leadership Concepts. It's now called Christ-Led Community. CLC is the acronym that most people know by. And I went through this program, and a guy named Hal Haddon wrote it. And one of the key principles out of it is this idea of the exchange life. And it comes from Galatians 2:20, if you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. It says, I have been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in this body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I'm gonna pause for a minute. I wake up every morning saying that verse. When my feet hit the floor, I remember whose I am and who I have faith in. And I've been doing that for years. But the idea behind exchange life is this, is that I was trying to live my career and do all my own performance in my mm-hmm. energy. And it was until that point where I surrendered to God and gave it to him and asked him for his strength to work in him or have him work in me and through me instead of me trying to do it on my own. That's the exchange life. I'm exchanging my life for the life that he gives me and works in me and through me. And man, 2005, I just mentioned, that was the tipping point where the exchange life started to come into play for me. And understanding what that looks like.
So I have a question about that, because I think give us a contrast of once you start living that out, where your faith and your was integrated into all parts of life versus before. Like, what was the difference? Because I mean, you wanted to even more success and more high poweredness, but you weren't as performance driven because your identity was different. So like, talk about the contrast, because a lot of people are listening to this and they're like, I'm on the gerbil wheel of trying to get the performance, you know, and the ladder climbing, the whole thing, versus actually integrating that place of identity. And so I think it's just a really powerful conversation.
Yeah. So thank you for that. So the answer to that would be this, is that I've shifted my focus from self to others.
Wow. Mm. Wow. There's a new poster on the wall.
Yeah, that well, the poster. Well, the poster came down, right? He said, "You're an idiot. Why are you putting this up here? This is stupid." But the idea is this: is that when you're focused on success, and I tell people all the time, there's nothing wrong with success. It's a question about why you're wanting to be successful. And if it's typically about me, my status, what I can do, how much I can earn, a position that I can attain in the organization, the motive probably you might want to check that out a little bit. But when you move into this realm of significance is when you start to take your eyes off of yourself and put it on to others. And so in my journey, it started becoming, okay, I'm going to be empathetic toward the associates that are around me, my peers, even above or below, however that was, I want to see things from their point of view. When I got into leadership roles, I had the opportunity to go shape employee engagement. Cultures. I leaned in to help people achieve their goals in their career, not just mine. I recruited the best talent that I could get to help shape and mold and develop them into whether they're both personal and professional superstars, if you will. And so it became more about the team, what we could accomplish together. And I felt like if I focused on that, then we would do great things, extraordinary things together. So that was the shift in me. Now, I tell you this, I'll be quite frank with you. I've said this before, that working at the Coca-Cola company during the 22 years that I was there, and that's a number of dog years, if you will, that's again, long time. But if you ask people that I was around that first half, probably in Knoxville and Montgomery, where I was a field-based associate, and then compared that to my time at the Coca-Cola and after that 2005, tipping point for me, probably have some different reactions. You might have some reactions from people early on saying, nope, guy was a jerk. He's written books. I know that, but I still don't believe him. Or yeah. You have people that I worked with directly and they saw the change. And it wasn't because I was trying to change to change. It was because the Lord was working in me. And it was a daily gradual process, gradual process.
Okay. Before we move on to our next question, I have one more. So you went from performance-based. Yeah. Metrics.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden now you have this tipping point in 2005. Mm-hmm. It must have been a struggle for you to keep performance moving forward, but then caring for people in a new way. Can you talk to us about in that massive change that you had, how were you able to put people over performance?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And if folks are listening today, I'm sure that's a question that's on their mind, because I tell people all the time, Bob, that results are table stakes. So we're not marginalizing results. You have to deliver results. But the question is, how do you get there? How do you do that? You still need to do it. I remember Sandy Douglas used to be the president of Coca-Cola North America. And something he said stuck with me. Before he left the organization, and he was in this big meeting and revealing the plans for Coke and all that kind of stuff. And then somebody raised their hand and the stock price wasn't doing as well as it might've been doing. And he fielded a question. The person said, why is the stock price not doing as well as we think it should be based on all the things that you say we're going to do? I remember Sandy just simply saying, if we focus on these things, the results will follow.
Wow.
And so I took that and I said, you know what, if I focus on the people, if I focus on creating engagement, driving and building a good culture, making it a great place to work where people want to come in the morning, they say, instead of their feet hitting the floor in the morning going, oh God, it's morning. They say, thank God it's morning. They pop up and want to come to work and they're willing to give the discretionary effort back to us. Those things drive results. They're going to lean in with you. If you love people, you care for them, you're empathetic, you help them get what they want to achieve. And that makes all the difference. And I tell you what, I would venture to say here's the deal. I saw some pretty cool people at the Coca-Cola company that were believers, actually, nice people. They treated people well, but they didn't get results. You don't stick around if you don't get results.
Right.
So it's table stakes, right? You got to have those table stakes, but the leadership part is in the how.
Oh, that's so good. I'm thinking about Diet Coke. Now, why is Diet Coke so addictive? more addictive than crack. I'm just kidding. We won't go there. But we joke around in our house that Diet Coke, we saw a meme that Diet Coke or Coke Zero is like refrigerator cigarettes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. It's crazy. Donald Trump
even has a button on his desk for Coca-Cola. Like, it's crazy how permeating that brand is. But for real, the question I would ask is, like, towards the end of your career in this specific field, you had kind of a hardship happen. I read in your notes, a false accusation. I want to go there because I feel like so many people deal with so many different things when it comes to their career. And you don't think somebody goes through this much of a good career and then they get hit, whether it's spiritual warfare, natural, just misunderstanding, just accusation, whatever it is. Talk it to us about what happened.
Yeah, sure. So back in 2016, I'm still employed with the Coke company, but I have this desire, burning desire to set an exit plan together, right? And what does that look like? And if you've ever heard of Bob Buford's book, Halftime, Bob put in there this thing called the sigmoid curve. And the idea is that you start your exit strategy or your next career before you hit the apex of the one and start going down. What happens is guys like me, they get to 55 if they take early retirement and they get out and say, okay, I'm going to start a consulting business. It's hard to do. It really is. And so a lot of people walk away for a couple of years. And so I just slowly started my path on that. I got certified with the John Maxwell team. Thank you. And they gave me the ability and licensed material to go out and coach, teach, and train on the side and actually use some of that material at the Coca-Cola company.
Wow.
And, what a bit. Long story short, I was in Las Vegas and I was invited by a team from the Coca-Cola company to go and do a workshop for them. And I had at one point my costs associated with the workshop published publicly. And when I delivered that, somehow, some way, somebody made the connection that I had charged the company a fee for delivering that workshop to my peers. Now, let's pause for a minute. If you're in a big corporation, number one, before you make an accusation, you probably need to have some evidence. Right. Number two, there would have to have been a master service agreement between my LLC or my company and the Coca-Cola company. Manager's approval would have had to been made to pay me money. None of that existed. Yet one day, this is probably, it was literally the day, I want to say it's the day after I announced my retirement. I was going to retire at the end of June. This happened in May before that. I announced my retirement, and then I get this little email that pops up and says, conference call requested at such and such time, Zoom call. And it was for the next day, and it was from our code of business conduct people. I call them the police.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second, I got a month left. What is something's happened? What's gone on? And he just came through and told me the next day all these allegations. And he started asking a lot of private questions and all that. The net was, it was very scary. My pension was at stake. I could have been fired for any reason. My 401k, all the stuff on that, my medical benefits, it was a big deal after being 22 years. And it was a huge financial hit. And not to mention, told you I've been trying to build this platform or thing that I'm doing right now for about 10 years. And so can you imagine if it goes in the newspaper and I got canned for these things? Well, long story short, I know we're winding up on time. I get home from a vacation and I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan in the bathroom. Won't still tell you, I was actually in the bathroom there. And I get this text from my manager saying that I had been cleared.
Wow.
From the charges 2 weeks before I was about to retire. I don't know why, guys, that someone made a false accusation against me. I think there's all kinds of, whether you mentioned spiritual warfare, whether it was somebody had a grudge against me or whatnot. But it taught me this. It taught me this. And this is the point really of one of the chapters I write in the new book, is that I maintained my integrity. Now, Warren Buffett says this, right? If you've heard this, he said, if you follow a car long enough for 500 miles, you're going to find a cop does. You're going to find something wrong. So doesn't mean I was perfect through everything.
Yeah.
But I was genuinely trying to be integrous with my time, my effort, and I wasn't charging the company anything. This was all free, right? On it. And so there was no proof. And what their final comment was, it said that there is no, there's no rule around this. There's no violation. They didn't have any rule for what I was doing. And so all of that just messed with my head. I had to walk through forgiveness, letting go of resentment. And that's about 2 years, guys. It really did. I felt some PTSD on the other end of it. But that's the story on it. My message to your audience is that integrity, if you integrity will pay off, right? You may have false accusations, but if you stay and maintain your integrity, you're cool, you're calm, you're trusting the Lord in the situation, trying to figure out why, not why necessarily is this happening, but what can I learn from it?
Yeah.
And there's a whole other side of the story I'd love to tell you. But that's where we landed with that situation just right before I left the Coca-Cola company.
Wow, that's incredible how Jesus gets you through, prepares and gets you through. Well, Preston, as we close, tell us about your new book, How is Greater Than What?
Yeah, thank you.
And tell us about how our listeners can get a hold of you and your consulting business.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So How is Greater Than What? I've got it up on the screen here. This is really just a little mock-up. It's going to be available on September the 30th on Amazon. Third book I've written. And the idea here was it's really, I started cobbling this together based on a bunch of blogs that I've written over the past 10 years. And the idea behind it is how do we help somebody understand that the how they do something is actually greater than what they achieve? And I look forward to readers checking that out. And you can just send me a note if you want to at preston@prestonpoor.com. That's my email address. Or just go to prestonpoor.com on the internet. Check that out. I've got a podcast like you guys do. I'm not near as famous as you all are. But would love to have the opportunity to interact with you and love to explore how I might be able to help you if you're having some problems, issues, concerns, questions along the lines that we just talked about today.
Well, Preston, I love having these conversations because this kind of topic that we're talking about today, where you're just sharing about your life and your stories, I think it probably heals people who are going through similar things and also defines and brings some defining moments. So I want to encourage you, get a hold of Preston and all of his materials. Of course, he coaches, but also his three books. And Preston, we hope to have you back.
All right, John. Thank you. Love to be back. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being a part of Exploring the Marketplace, where faith and business collide to shape culture. Stay ahead with free resources, online courses, and exclusive content at bowlsministries.com. And even dive deeper with our online training, spiritual growth mentoring community, or grab a copy of Wired to Hear, the book that Bob and I co-authored to help you hear God in your career.
We're building a global conversation. You can be part of it. Partner with us or donate today, or recommend new guests for our show to fuel the impact. Let's stay connected. Follow us on social media at Sean Bowles or at Bob Hassan.
And did you love the episode? Share it with your network and leave a review. It helps us so much to reach more people who are ready to bring the kingdom into the marketplace.
See you next time.